Welcome to the Feed Central Hay Matters podcast, your go-to source for all things hay-related in Australia. I'm your host, John Paul Driver. In today's episode, we're joined by Graham Thompson, but you'll probably know him as Tomo. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Tim was telling me ahead of time, your claim to fame is that you've been carting hay for some number of years that's greater than most everybody else that's ever carted hay. How long have you been hauling hay? When did you start?
I started when I was 14 years old. I got offered a contract job for a shilling a bale, which I don't know how much that is in today's language. It's 10 cents in Australian today, but it was good money in those days. This was 62 years ago.
You've been carting hay for 62 years.
And I've never missed a year in that, ever since that first time of doing some contract hay carting.
Can you tell us about that first experience?
It was quite funny. The hay was about a mile away from where it had to go. A neighbour asked my father, would I cart it? And Dad said, yeah, you can have a tractor, you can have a little low trailer, go and get your schoolmate to help you. And I said, blow my schoolmate. He'll want sixpence, half the money. If I have to get him, I'll do the whole lot myself. So I rigged the tractor up with two pieces of hay band to keep it steering up the rows, and I'd jump off, put it in low gear, jump off, run along, and put 30-odd bales on the trailer, and then drive back to the shed. In 3 days, I had the whole 1,000 bales carted in and had the equivalent of 4 weeks basic wage in Australia at that time, which my mother said, that's not bad money, you want to stick at this job. So I thought, yeah, it's not bad money. Like, it was big money. If you get four times of basic wage in 3 days when you're 14 years old.
That was wealth and opulence. You thought you were the richest 14-year-old in Australia.
Well, I probably was then, like, not really, but...
Yeah, of course.
And I decided to stick at it. Well, by the time I was 18, I had enough money saved up out of my hay to buy a new vehicle.
And what was it?
A Ford Falcon Ute. Being young and stupid, I managed to crash and ride off in a couple of years' time, but that happened back in those days, probably still does.
For sure.
I kept on doing contract hay carting. When I got later years, into the, 45 years ago, I was very, very lucky. Was very lucky to get offered through a mate a contract to supply hay to a very big feedlotting situation. They were talking 15,000 tonnes of hay per annum. Back in, this was 1978, which those days, all that hay was in what we term idiot bricks, which are small square bales. And that meant a huge amount of work. Like, to shift that much hay was just mind-boggling. We managed to do it. One big year, I finished up with 3 trucks running. We had to cart it anything up to 200 miles away back and get it there, so it was virtually a one-trip-a-day job. You had to have men, labour. Looking back, I don't know how we did it, but we did.
That's a tremendous amount of small bales.
It was just mind-boggling. I remember one year we carted in 2 months just off the property I was living on and around the area. I carted 70,000 down in 6 weeks, and they fed it out at the feedlot in April, May, and they fed it out in 10 days. So we had a lot of... There was other contractors involved too. Cut forward a little bit to the the early 80s, or in the 80s, the round rolls came in. We thought, terrific, because you could front-end loader, put 6-foot-wide round rolls on, 2 wide on the truck, drive straight down the highway in those days with no escorts or anything, fact, 12 foot wide, nobody seemed to worry. Oh, a few people did, but, you know, they got over it. That made a huge difference. So less labour, less trucks. And then I was very lucky to get involved. I got offered the contract of a different feedlot and they wanted the same amount of hay, but big squares came in, the first of the Heston big squares. My area was the first place in Australia to get the 4x4 big Heston bales. And one of the dealers, I think it was about 84 or 5, he sold more big square balers than any other dealer in the world and got a free trip back to Italy to see where they were made.
Huh. Well, that's a good deal.
Yeah, it was just mind-boggling the amount of hay that was getting done. And, of course, it moved on from there into we were exporting sheep and a few cattle in those days to the Middle East. I did get involved in putting small squares on boats to go and feed dairy cattle in Saudi Arabia. That was a bit of another story. It was hard work. There was no double dump bales or anything. They all went up on a crane, manually stacked in the, not in the hold, but in a shed thing, and then fed out to the cattle going over, and some kept to keep the cattle going over there. So that was probably some of the very first hay that was exported out of Australia. That would have been, I think, in 84. Mm-hmm. From then I spent the next probably till the early 2000s just constantly carting hay with two or three trucks on the road, and the job slowed down. Oh, I can't remember the time. The Middle East war over there slowed the whole job right down.
That would have been early 90s. Does that sound right? Or
that's right. Yeah, that'd be about right. So I thought, oh, well, it's a domestic market. And I'd by that time had geared up into, back in the day, you were only allowed 40-foot trailers. I'd got pushed the outer boundaries, if that's the expression, and gone to anything up to 46 and low-profile drop-deck trailers. I could get a big amount of hay on. Mm-hmm. So I started carting domestically then and got very involved in that, running hay virtually anywhere from my home base, which is southwestern Victoria, which is right down the bottom, and we'd go as far as Queensland, which anything up to 2,000 kilometres mm-hmm. with hay, right up into Queensland, a place called Cameron's Corner, which is the border of South Australia, New South Wales and Queensland. Around the east coast, right up Bega, all through there. And it was very good because people, especially, it was mainly dairy, but some of it was drought people, and they were very, even in those days, realised that, oh, well, this bloke, most trucks are getting 15 tonnes of hay on, this bloke's getting 22 or 3. That's economics as far as the delivered end product. So you know, I finished up then with two trucks doing that and then back into the other jobs. So I'd got very, very, very busy in that early 2000s. Time I got to about 2010 or 15, I thought, it's getting a bit hard work. Truck drivers were getting harder to get, or pointers as we used to describe them, which is just some bloke that knows how to sit behind a steering wheel but he's got no idea how to drive down the road. There was a bit of that went on. So I backed off back to one truck. I still run a truck now at my age just for my own local work and probably still do 1,000, 1,500 tonnes of hay yearly, just for my own personal clients that have lived close. I don't do much long-distance work. Probably the furthest I drive's 200 or 300 kilometres on on a trip. I don't go right up thousands of kilometres. Looking back, I can still remember what my mother said at that first job, that, no, you want to stick with this, there's money in it, but you'll have some hard work. And I thought, well, I don't think hard work ever killed anybody that I know of, and it's good. There's only one thing, you probably can't put this in a podcast, it's very good for the beer industry too, because when you're carting hay, you have to have a cool drink at night time.
Especially when you're moving small bales. It's the electrolytes. It's a real thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah, another aside that I've been very passionate about for the last 25 years was a thing called the Australian Fodder Industry Association, which I was actually an inaugural, yeah, that's the right word, member and a founder of it. We thought, yeah, we need something. Australia's, well, you can't get lost in Australia because there's just water all around the edge. There's a fence. You can't get out of it. So we may as well all stick together. And it's been a very, very good trip, that. I've really enjoyed it, still do to this day, because the thing with hay and general farming in general, that if you don't keep learning something new every year, that's when the wheels start falling off. Even though you may not use that expertise that's offered to you, you know it's there. So you have to keep your head above the water. Otherwise, we'd be still running around cutting hay with a scythe if we didn't, you know, follow technology. When it first started, I thought, oh, yeah, you know, they came out with the new, which I had some of, you know, just a 7-foot. We used to use an old sickle mower. We thought that was good. It broke down, you ran a bit of wire through it. Then they came out with disc mowers. We've just kept on moving on. And if you don't follow technology, well, you're behind the eight ball. And there's still some older farmers out there that, you know, they won't move ahead with the times.
I don't know very many still cutting hay with a scythe.
No, there's not many. But
I do know that if you put a cap underneath your elbow as you're running that scythe, that's the proper position and technique to run one.
Yes.
But yes. I had to find somebody that was quite experienced in life, well on in his years, to teach me that.
Yeah, well, I knew a chap, and, well, he's passed away now, but he was still doing the hay with the horses and binder.
Really?
And he was actually a very clever bloke, and he kept on doing it, and it got to be a historic type thing. People would come and watch it, because he had four Clydesdale horses. He towed the little binder. They went into Stokes.
Yeah.
And I have got a photo at home of a Kenworth truck with 40-foot trailer behind it, loaded with sheaved hay.
Really?
Which that was done in back in the 80s too, and the photo hangs in my office wall still to this day, big coloured photo, because there's not many people who carted sheaved hay in a Kenworth truck. Not in this modern day and age.
Very, very. Now, that would have gone to a chaff mill, right?
Yes, that was all used for chaff, yep.
And that would have been the very highest quality too, because all the stems are laid the same direction.
Yes, that was, and this chap was actually right into horses. Some was sold, and he had some of the best chaff. He had his own chaff cutter as well. Mm-hmm. And it was kept for that specific reason. He had the best chaff in the district.
Huh.
Bar none.
Huh. That's quite something. I'd love to see that picture if we can make that happen. That'd be great. Let's double back to AFIA. Now, you said you were an inaugural member. You haven't missed an AFIA meeting, have you?
I have been to every conference that's been held. I think, yes, I'm told anyway, and... Well, no, I haven't missed any, and
right.
They said I'm, yeah, the only person that's been to everyone.
Now, we're going to do a little bit of rah-rah for AFIA and industry associations. I'm a big fan. What are some of the personal benefits that you've had from attending AFIA meetings?
I think the biggest personal things I've done is terrific friends I've made, and I mean really, really good friends that I still have. Of last night after a meeting, I was looking for contacts. I have 54 contacts in my phone now of direct people that I can just ring and talk to, discuss things, and they are in, I think I've got every state in Australia. There's somebody in every state in Australia that I've got their phone contacts. Mm-hmm. I won't say there's a lot of contacts in the phone that should be scrubbed out, but something like 500 of them altogether. So, but the friends I've made, when you get, well, this year we've had a very poor season down there part of the world. Well, I can just get on the phone and ring somebody that might be a contact from years ago. Oh, g'day, Bill. How are you? Do you know where there's any hay that I can find? Yep. So-and-so, my neighbour's got some. I'll ring him, get back to you. Those contacts over the years have been invaluable too, but mainly for me, for AFIA, I spent the early years, I was on the board, I was very involved for 5 or 6 years with research and development. Actually sat on that board in Canberra, or the meetings used to be Canberra. That was brilliant as well. But the main thing, I'm sure, is the friends, the personal friends I've made that I'll remember, well, till the day I'm not here. That's the best. Study tours, I've been on one, learned a lot. AFIA ran a study tour to America back in about 18, 20 years ago, approximately. I decided to go on it. Terrific. I shouldn't say this. I had preconceived ideas of Americans that, they're a bit loud and whatever. I got over there. Their farmers are no different to our farmers. And they'll do anything for you, talk to you, show you, you know. There was a few things happened on the trip that, different farmers completely put themselves out to make sure our trip went all right. Mm-hmm. Terrific people. I learned a lot on that trip. Part of it was going to a John Deere factory, shown right through it, manager of John Deere speaking to us. Terrific. Then a few of us decided to extend the study tour, and it was cheaper to fly home from San Francisco. Oh, let's blow this. We'll go to England and come home to Australia the back door way, through which we did. That was also a bit of open my eye. I thought England was only a small little paddock. We get over there and find a 50-foot mower 20 years ago.
Ah.
Five-gang mower that we saw working. Oh, right, you've learned something. You can cut an awful lot of hay with a 50-foot mower, especially a self-propelled big thing. It was mind-boggling. We said to the driver after, he said, oh, I've never found enough country. He said, I've done 1,000 acres in daylight, but he said, that's as far as you can go.
that's the biggest paddock you could find.
No, that was about 6 paddocks to get that,
oh, geez,
that much. But the whole thing folded up to 10, 12 feet wide to drive down the roads, and it was mind-boggling. I did another tour then. Oh, that was a private holiday. Right through Europe, you go on a river cruise from down the bottom back up to Holland, and I picked all the hay farming sides out. Well, I didn't realise, you know, Germany, what they were doing there. I went on a side tour out there for a day. Once again, you've got to keep learning, otherwise you get behind. I haven't probably used a lot of those things that, you know, have come out because, well, we laughed about it yesterday with the bloke. He said, oh, you got GPS in your tractors. I said, no, because I said, some of the country I run hasn't even got satellite coverage for fires, anything. We just put it up the old-fashioned way. My fertiliser contractor apologises about one paddock because the satellite doesn't work out here. it's very good for governments and everything to say we'll completely go digital all over the world. They want to forget that if it doesn't work, you've got to go back to the old-fashioned way, because it's the only way it works.
I was on a call with some folks from Montana who were celebrating that they finally got cell service in 2019.
Yeah, I can believe that. I bought the first, and I've still got it, and I've actually Googled it. I bought one of the first, I think they called them a bag phone.
Ah, yes.
In the very early days. I have still got that phone home in the shed, and I've researched it on the internet. It's actually worth more now than I paid for it as an antique.
It's a collector's item.
Yeah.
Not to say that any of your trucks are collector's items, but you must have had quite the collection along the way.
I haven't really. I've never bought a new truck.
Uh-huh.
Because even back in the day when trucks were cheaper, and I'm talking, you know, perhaps you could buy a new truck for $100,000, the minute you drive that truck out the showroom and down the road and do two trips, it's suddenly only worth $90,000. So I always stuck with buying good second-hand vehicles. Mm-hmm. I think I've only had 8 trucks altogether. I had no qualms whatsoever if a truck died, so to speak, motor-wise. Bingo. There's a repair place or a place that sells new motors. I remember back in the little square days when we were doing these 70,000, one of the old Inters, she died. 6-cylinder Inter. I rang Melbourne and I said, "You got a motor that'll go?" And yes. We went down. I had a local mechanic who was, well, wasn't qualified, but he knew the job inside out. On Monday morning, that truck was back on the road with a new motor in it, going, just like that. Down the ute, grabbed the motor. Ute was probably a half overloaded coming home, but that didn't matter. Endless chain, drop the motor in, hook her all up, and away she went. I did that with all my trucks. My old truck that, a lot of people remember, I've still got photos of it, the one I said's got the sheaved hay on it. I bought that second-hand at 3 years old, 1978 model.
Mm-hmm.
It is still going to this day. It is now based in Bendigo with 9 million kilometres on it.
Oh.
It's been rebuilt a few times, but it's a farmer has got it there and still carts his own grain and stock with it. So that's, you can keep trucks going as long as you look after them, drive them sensibly and are prepared to, when they need a dollar spent on it, just spend it.
Hmm. Yeah. I suspect that's advice that you'd give to anybody coming on up.
Definitely would to anybody that was starting out because, why do you want to? Most people start young. You've got family, everything you've got. Why do you need to hang another $500,000 debt around you, pay interest on? You're virtually driving to keep the banks happy. That's pay the interest. So you're better off buying something you can afford, keep it going, look after it, and you'll get ahead a long way quicker. I know a few blokes have done it. It's all right, later on I could have afforded to buy new trucks, but I thought, I'll buy new tractors, but trucks, I just stuck with the very good second-hand ones.
Really quick, for American listeners that still use miles, that's 5.5 million miles on a truck.
That'd be right, yep.
That's just astounding.
Yeah, it's around the world a few times.
Several. Many times, wow. One of the things Americans always think about when we think about Australian trucking is the impressive loads that Australians can haul and legally haul and maybe not legally haul. Do you have any particular runs or trips or loads that come to mind that was exceedingly special?
Ah, yes, probably lots, but we're limited to when you're only dragging one trailer to about around the 43 tonnes. I remember pulling in to check a load to go quite some distance years ago on the Weybridge. I thought, I knew the truck was working, getting it there, and I thought I'd better call in and check this, and The bloke at the weighbridge said, you better go and take some of them off. He said, you're not allowed to grow 60 tonne. So I was only double. I had double on what I was meant to be carting. There are still people that push the boundaries, but most of us now just stop somewhere around legal as close as you can. Because Australia is such a big place, you need to be able to fill that truck up and, have it working. And old chap that's dead now said he talked me in the early days and he said, yep. And he said, if you stick with Kenworth trucks, they'll pull anything. And he was pretty right. I've tried a few other brands and, if you stick with that and put the right motor in it, they'll just pull. I think it's getting difficult, more difficult as we go. I think more government regulations coming in all the time, and I think that happens everywhere around the world now. And to me, yes, a lot of them were necessary, but they were only brought in because in Australia anyway, there's always been idiots, literally, one term, I could think of others, that just don't know anything. Like I've seen blokes go down the road, flat chat at 70, 80 miles an hour in American language, and they've got a couple of ropes over a load of hay, and they wonder why it falls off and tips over when they go around the corner that they're meant to be going around at 20 mile an hour, and they're doing about 50, and the whole thing falls over, and then they wonder why. So naturally, you have to have more regulations come in, but it's only regulations are brought in for what I call idiots.
That's a very good point. I appreciate load securement. There's few things more important to the integrity of the industry than good load securement. Now, you would have hauled hay through Melbourne to Gippsland Dairies. Is that right?
Hundreds of loads.
Tell me a story.
We used to stack to out the other side of Melbourne, halfway through Gippsland. We used to run the truck 24/7. One driver would do a trip, truck would come back, load it up, and it'd go again. That's how you get miles on trucks. But anyway, I was having my sleep time. This bloke rang up, and I told him which way to go. You turn off at one town, and that was all right. Yeah, he's right. About midnight, I get a phone call. And, what's wrong? I think I hit a train. Oh, suddenly I'm 100% awake. And what he'd done was why I sent him the other way. There was a bridge that you drove. The train line went over the top, the road went underneath, and it was all signposted 4.3 metres, which I knew we were allowed at that stage go to 4.6, I think, but I knew my load was about 4.4 because I'd measured it time and time again to know what it was. But this bloke decided to go the 4.3 way. Luckily, there must have been a couple of inches spare. He flattened all the, sort of pushed the top bales down a fraction, didn't break any straps, but sort of pushed everything down that inch. That's how hard, because he would have gone through underneath at 100 kilometres an hour, but it must have made a huge whoosh type, whoosh on the truck. As he went through, he thought he'd hit the train, but he hadn't. But yeah, that's just one of the stories. But I've never had any trouble going through. Like we had to go through Melbourne in the old days, before even there was a bridge over the river, so you had to detour your way around virtually through the city with a load of hay. And yeah, long as you're careful. Then they opened it up and they put a tunnel in, which I can get through legally. So that was good. But now I try and steer clear for it because there's about 10 million other idiots trying to drive through Melbourne at the same time. So I keep out of the road.
For a young farmer or truck driver, do you have any advice?
Yes, young farmers or young truck drivers, probably relates to both, is if you've got a passion for it, stick with it. There'll be a few ups and downs because that's just life. Probably one of the things, you'll meet a few people along the way they'll rub you up the wrong way, for want of a better word. Don't hold it completely against them and never talk to them again for life, because you can often learn something along the way. You'll make the odd, what's termed an enemy. I've always worked on the theory of keeping in touch with those people and keeping them close enough that I can know what, because they can't backstab you from 2 feet away, but they're very good at it from 100 yards back, when you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you keep them in the circle. Don't drop them, because that's when trouble can start. But no, look, if you've got a passion for either truck driving or farming, yes. The truck driving part of it, I think the young ones here now, they can't get young truck drivers. There's money to be made, but not as much as it was in the old days, because the corporates, as I call them, or the big companies, are just, all they want to do is get product from one end of the country to the other as cheaply as possible. Bloke steering up the road, you pay him as little as he'll accept, so to speak. You can't make the real dolly you could.
Tomo, this has been absolutely wonderful. I enjoy the stories and the understanding of where we come from, and then, of course, the sentiments around AFIA and connecting with people within the industry. The podcast is proudly presented by Feed Central. Stay tuned in for upcoming episodes.